I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Cross one timer scores! Rasmus Dahlin with the overtime winner! That is a delicious finish by the captain, and the Sabres take it 4-3.
We dealt with a tough loss against Montreal. We dealt with goal getting taken away. I thought our answer, tying goal. Great job on the tying goal. Hell of a job on the tying goal. Played the game the right way, we got rewarded. That's a big 2 points. We talk about not losing. Not losing 2 games in a row. That's a great effort. Big win. Big win.
Great game, boss. Way to stick with it and get the card.
Yeah.
Keep doing good on here, boys.
Yeah.
All right. Any guesses as to what he said there? Sorry, I couldn't figure it out.
I couldn't figure out what Lukanen said either. It must be a locker room
talk. If we're going to run this stuff, we need captioning because we look like
they have their own locker room. They have their own locker room language that they use inside the locker room, so nobody tells anybody what they're saying. But I was intrigued by the, you know, McLeod pick there because he just got it a few games ago. And usually you're looking at other players to contribute. And I thought Zach Benson was fantastic in that game, wherever he went. You know, I feel like the Sabres got, you know, chances and got energy. And so I think my first star for me was Zach Benson. But look, from the press box, Lukanen had a different look and picked Ryan McLeod for the veste given to the players.
Well, I mean, based on our discussion yesterday and my proclamation that Dylan Cousins had the most pressure on him, like most things I say, that may or may not have been true. And if you were to say that Ryan McLeod had to fill Tage Thompson's shoes and produced a goal and an assist in a narrow win, pretty obvious he would get the vest, right?
Very good, you know what I mean? Point there.
Like, nobody had more points. He's filling the biggest
yes.
role. Everything else on this team does not look like Tage Thompson. So when he is not there, it is the biggest hole you could possibly have on this team. You could argue, we could start the argument with me and say, oh, well, if they lost Darlene, no chance, because you got a number one overall pick in Owen Power.
And you got Bo Byram.
Yeah. There's nothing like Tage Thompson on this team. So the fact that Ryan McLeod went in and had a multi-point game, he absolutely should have got the vest. He should get the vest for the week for that.
And great points. Great points, Brian. Great energy coming out of, this morning, Duffer. I love it.
I'm mad because I couldn't understand a damn word on the sound. That's why.
That's fine. Oh. Don't worry about that stuff. It's fun. It just, the look on Ryan McLeod's face when he got it was surprised. Like, almost like, well, yeah, put me on the top line and this is the results you're going to get, bud. Like, that's
but
the way it goes.
Wasn't just the top line because it wrinkled and evolved as the game went on. Because
and third Benson, period change.
Right? See, so you had Benson there, but then obviously Benson ended up going back with Cousins and Quinn. So that meant Paterka in the more customary, you know, opposite wing of Alex Tuch. So interesting to see the usage last night.
Very, very interesting because third period started and all of a sudden we saw Paterka with McLeod and Tuch and Benson with Cousins and Quinn. And really, what did we see? Like, Cousins and his line with Benson on the line had a fantastic third period, right? It, like the goal that was taken away, goalie interference, I get it. And look, was it the right call? I know everybody's going to argue it, but if you pay attention to the National Hockey League and you look at all the goalie interference calls that have been negated goals, the one in Toronto just two nights ago, and we talked to Darren Dreger about it yesterday, the smallest of contact inside the crease is going to get waved off. That is how they've been, and that's how it has been, and I knew when this one went in, and then I saw the replay, and the overhead shows, it's in the blue paint. I knew it was going to get waved off, but the play by Cousins before that, out-muscling his player in the corner, making the play, going to the front of the net, getting the goal. Like, they looked the way they need to look for the whole game, because the way that it started last night, first shift, Cousins starts the game with Peterka and Quinn. First shift, they didn't do much. And then you have McLeod's line with Tuck and Benson, and they got a great chance. Then you have the Zucker chance right away on that next shift. Then you have the Lafferty chance on the next shift. And then, you know, the Cousins lines come back on the ice, and they give up a goal. And I was like, oh, this is not the start that Dylan wanted, right? A tough first shift and then gives up a goal. But I do believe in the third period when Benson was reunited with Cousins and Quinn, that line dominated in all aspects of the game, and it was great to see.
Yeah. I was thinking Cousins could have had interference on that big hit that everybody loved so much.
Well, a little
remember
borderline,
we had
yes.
the Zucker incident earlier in the year, and I'm always aware of, well,
does he have the puck?
Does he
is
have
there
the
control
puck?
Of the puck?
What's the timing here? Yes. Are the two of them engaged on one thing, or is one taking advantage of the other in this situation? And again, it's about as clear as goaltender interference, which you're painting to be incredibly clear today. I don't think it's that clear because I didn't really see, like it was ironic after having the yellow paint, clear paint, blue paint discussion yesterday on the Perreault highlight reels, but it wasn't so much about the paint for me. It's I'm like, literally nothing happened here. Nothing happened here.
And it wasn't on the initial shot. It was on the rebound, right? So if it goes in on the initial shot, you're thinking, okay, Benson made contact, right? Bennington couldn't play his positioning, but I think Bennington sold it well. Like, because when he ends up flopping and
exactly
fly and like laying down, then you say, okay, the contact affected his ability to make the first save, and he wasn't in position to make the second save. Therefore, the contact was the reason for it, and we're going to wave it off. I think Bennington played it good. He's an experienced goaltender, and he understands a little contact. But that's how you do it.
If we're going to be on this topic, which it clearly was part of last night's game. What was Oscar Sundqvist thinking? He gave Buffalo the game.
Oh, well, yes. He,
what are you doing?
You're running the goaltender with a minute left?
The game. Like, he's lucky Buffalo chose to run off the final minute of regulation. Like, they could have attacked 6-on-5, still had a power play in overtime, and actually stripped St. Louis of a point.
Well, yeah, and I actually think that was a dumb play by Sundqvist to run Levi in that sense. A minute left, it's a tie game. You're going to skate in the paint, and it's not like the puck is there and you're making a play on the puck or whatever. You just quit. Like, you know, when you're like are skating, you're going to like open skate, right? And you're skating around and you're like, East Aurora Outdoor or Riverside or the canal side, whatever. And you're like kind of going a little faster. And you're like, I could really stop right before the boards. But instead of stopping, I'm just going to go into the boards and slam in the boards to stop myself, right? That's like what he did. He could have stopped before Levi and thought, well, this guy's got gear. Why not I use him to stop myself? And then that's the penalty. But Ryan Callahan spotted it right away. He says, keep the puck, because I get it. It's East versus West. What Buffalo is worried about and concerned about is getting the 2 points.
Yeah.
Get the 4-on-3 for a full 2 minutes in overtime, right? Instead of doing 5-on-4, and then after a minute, if St. Louis gets the puck, what happens? Face-off is at center ice. Who knows if you win this face-off or whatnot. Get the full 2 minutes in overtime. But St. Louis, on the other end, like, what were they doing? They were content of getting the 1 point. Like, I would have said, I'm going to, you know.
Why wouldn't they be?
Well, I get that. That's important for them. So it worked out.
Have you seen what they've been doing lately?
I know they've been giving up goals in the third period like crazy. So, but okay, let's talk about that power play in overtime. I felt like they were far. Like the Sabres were too far from the net. They were very much on the perimeter. And when they tried to make that play to Alex Tuch on the back door and his stick broke and he went to the bench, I felt like urgency kicked in. Like, oh, crap. We're 3-on-3 now. We're not 4-on-3. Let's get a little closer to the net and get a chance. And that's when Peterka went to Dahlin, right? Like when Tuch had to leave, in my opinion, I was like, oh no, St. Louis is going to put a ton of pressure. But it changed the way they approach. And Peterka was like, well, it's 3-on-3. I'm going to attack the middle. Right. Well, really, it was 4-on-3 because Cousins went right to the front of the net. But it changed their mentality right there. And the pass from Peterka to Dahlin happened.
Agreed. The stick break was the best thing that could have happened.
Yeah, because it changed the dynamic. 100%. It changed their approach.
And I get it. History has shown us. Ovechkin continues to show us. You can have setup power plays, and you can push and push and push and expect funneling it to the same area is going to get you that great result. But man, do I love an ad-lib power play. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if you've ever done the math, even in small sample sizes, but we obviously talk about it all the time. So much offense comes from broken plays, you know, an original shot attempt. Oh, either whiffed on it or glanced off of something, and all of a sudden somebody's teeing it up on an unsuspecting goaltender, and it's in the, you know, it's like, didn't draw that up, you know? So I just... It's good in the sense that it's a great reaction to an unexpected situation. So, and not to mention over the last 9 games, Buffalo's 9 games, they're nicely in the top 5 in power play success.
Power plays. Yeah.
It was always going to take them a while to climb the ladder based on being at 0 for so long. But there was also a time where the Sabres and the Oilers couldn't even do the math and get their penalty kill and their power play to 70%.
Yeah.
Now the Sabres are getting close to 20 on the power play. They're getting close to 80 on the penalty kill. And slowly but surely, they're both moving in the right direction. And oh, guess what? Both in small sample sizes were a big part of the win last night. Right. Yep. Just think, the Jets have been all world and everything. The Devils just had a sunrise vacation of all time. They did Global Series sunrise. They went to Florida to take on the defending champions for 2 days in the same rink.
Well, it was over 4 days because they went there the day before. They played a game, had a day off, then played the game. They were on a mini vacation to sunrise to play hockey.
And they won this. And by the way, the Panthers were on the longest active winning streak in the NHL prior to the Devils going there. So this is enormous for New Jersey, enormous. And it's also on the heels of an embarrassing because of how the game played out. 1-0 loss to San Jose at home before they went on the road trip. So kind of funny how that game unfolded. But when you look at the Jets and the Devils, and we know the Red Wings have been they've been a strange team. They can't seem to get the 5-on-5 consistency from a scoring standpoint. So their power play has been keeping them in there. Toronto also started terribly on the power play. And even without Matthews, you know, the numbers over this last few weeks has been pretty good. All I'm trying to say is the Sabres are in pretty good company here with how the power play has been going ever since that afternoon game at home against Detroit when they finally scored for the first time when Zucker got it off the Thompson rebound, right?
Yep.
So it's
Zucker scored on the next game, like I swatting the puck up in the air, and then it just got going.
The last 9 games, it's amazing.
Yeah, so that's exactly The confidence that Lindy Ruff was talking about, will get one before the end of the season. Now, I don't think he thought it was going to turn that quickly, but yeah, they've figured it out a little bit more. But even on plays like yesterday, like I said, the first minute and 20 seconds of that 4-on-3, it felt like they were looking for Peterka one-timer, and they were looking for, you know, maybe Dahlin do the switch. Tuck was doing a great job of trying to be on the back post with his skates opened up and his blade, and then they looked for him. And yeah, I think when, you know what? There's a couple of moments that unexpectedly changed the dynamic of the game. That broken stick by Alex Tuck changed the dynamic of the power play, which led to the Sabres winning. But as producer Jeff was talking to me before the show, he was at the game. And he said when the Dylan Cousins goal was waved off for goalie interference, felt like the rink got angry. It felt like the game changed a little bit, like there was a heightened sense of desperation in everything the Sabres did after that. Now, it started at the start of the third period. They had that heightened sense of, hey, we lost to Montreal, and we're not going to lose a second one here in this building and having a lead and giving it away, so let's go. But when the Cousins goal got waved off, not just the players had that heightened sense of let's go, it felt like the fans in attendance were angry about the call, and the energy like was different in the building after that call.
Yeah, and I mean, I always struggle when, you know, A, we're not involved in it, so it feels different, right? Like,
yeah,
there's a natural energy when we're doing the broadcast and we're in the arena, and it always, yeah, whether I'm watching on a phone or a laptop or somewhere outside of the, you know, the venue, it always feels odd, right? And because of the heightened importance of this game based on what happened against Montreal, I think my mind was viewing it in a way that I think Lindy kind of articulated but didn't dwell on in the post game. And like, without going as far as to say it felt flat or it felt quiet or it felt this, he acknowledged that some of his guys just didn't, like, they weren't going.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I was watching. And I'm like, this seems odd because you know that they're trying to manufacture something here to ensure that the same thing doesn't happen as it did on Monday. So I guess, you know, it is the nature of pro sports. You're not always going to get beauty for the entirety of 60 or 62 or 65 minutes plus, but they did find a way. So
it's the same thing for Levi. And I think we're like, you know, when you look at our talking points yesterday, oh, Levi is going to play against St. Louis. Lukanen's not dressed. James Reimer is going to back up. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, Lukanen is on the ice at practice today. And we'll see quick
on that. So there's three goalies on the ice right now in practice.
Yeah.
The Amerks have released Matt Vernon from his tryout because Felix Sandstrom is good to go.
Yes.
So they're back with Hauser and Sandstrom in Rochester, and the Sabres currently have three, and you can elaborate or not as to how long you think they'll have three.
Well, I think it's going to be three for a short future now, just because they have the roster flexibility, depending on what happened with Tage Thompson. But with Matthias Samuelsson being out long-term, they do have a roster spot for an extra goalie. Right now, they have an extra forward in Tage, an extra D in Henry Jokiharju, and an extra goalie, which was Lukanen last night. So there's your three extra roster spots. Now, if there was to be other injuries or concerns, they would have to manufacture some roster movement. But one of the talking points was Devon Levi. Levi, which I thought had a really good camp and a good first couple of games of the season. Had a tough one against Columbus and then another tough one. And, you know, against Montreal in the third period, it wasn't great, but I'm not going to count that against them so much because you come in the third period of a game, but it's still the NHL. You're still an NHL goaltender. You got to make saves and you give up two goals on four shots. Not going to be good enough. You know, a quick goal early on. Listen, it beats them, you know, power was soft in front of the net. It have like these things as a goaltender, sometimes you don't expect it, but you know what? It's your job too, to expect the unexpected, always be ready and be on top of everything. So that's the, you know, the main thing here. When you look at Levi, and Kyrou hit the post. It's 3-3. He hits the post, right? Like, okay, there were some bounces that went Levi's way, and he also made some good saves. I thought it was a good get back in the routine, get back in the rhythm situation for Levi here. But now we wait and see what happens tomorrow in Philadelphia, if Luukkonen is back in, or if it's, okay, let's give Levi another chance at feeling even more better about his game and continue to build on his development, which has slowed down a little bit here over the last 2-3 weeks with Luukkonen playing so well and playing so much.
What would you do?
I would go back with Levi.
Yeah.
I would go back with Levi and say, okay, look, I get it, Luukkonen, maybe you're good to go, but there's no need to rush it now. It's part of giving Levi the opportunity to build forward. Next week, you got 3 games in 4 nights. And then you go from there. Then you see after the West Coast trip what's happening. But I would go with Levi again tomorrow night, which could or could be a very different story when it comes to having the conversation with Luukkonen after practice today.
Latest update on goaltending around the NHL. And by the way, Buffalo's next opponent, Philadelphia, continues to just go through this carousel of day-to-day. But you never know who it's impacting. Like, yes. Lately, the number one guy, Sam Ersson's been so good. And then all of a sudden, he wasn't available yesterday. So Fedotov comes in, and he's able to get a shootout win, an overtime win, against the Ottawa Senators. Mm-hmm. So they keep using their carousel of netminders. And sadly, on an annual basis, Freddie Anderson's name gets caught up in all this. Anderson is now no longer week to week. He is way longer, according to Rod Brind'Amour and the Hurricanes. Now, this is relevant for a number of reasons, not the least of which is I promoted the nice numbers that Kochetkov had the other day just to elicit a response from you. So he will undoubtedly get more time, and the Hurricanes can only hope that Spencer Martin is better if he does see more time at some point than in his last go around, which ended up being pretty bad. Sam Ersson.
Or Carolina maybe looking around the league and saying, who's going to be put on waivers at some point that we could look at?
They because committed that's to Martin the, last year. I mean, I think.
You know what? If Anderson is going to be long-term, you're going Kochetkov, Spencer Martin. That may be uncomfortable place to be for Carolina.
Philly's next tomorrow, and Ersson has now been dubbed a lower body tweak. He's expected to miss 1 to 2 weeks, so we will not see him tomorrow when the Sabres take on the Flyers. And Couturier, who was listed as day-to-day yesterday, is still questionable for the Buffalo-Philly game tomorrow. Oh, by the way, Pyotr Kochetkov is also doubtful to play tomorrow.
So who's number four? I'm like, who's number four on that list in Carolina? You talked about Spencer Martin, and Yaniv Peretz is another one that maybe could be there. So, now if Anderson's long-term and Kochetkov is doubtful, Carolina finds themselves in a bit of a pickle here with their goalie situation.
Yeah, that is
are we going to hit over 100 goalies this year? Because we hit like 98 last year. And 98 basically tells you it's over 3 goalies per team, right? Like 96, it would be 3 goalies on average. And that's why I believe the Sabres did the James Reimer signing this summer and Sandstrom, and they want to make sure they have bodies that have gotten some NHL experience. It looks to me early in the season that we may go over 100 this season when you look at all the little injuries and guys getting a chance to play this year.
Well, Vasilevsky was healthy last night and became the fastest to 300 wins as far as games played is concerned. And also, because this ties in, and you wanted to mention it the other day, and I felt terrible that we didn't, was brand new franchise, the Utah Hockey Club, a new record for a netminder with that franchise, with Kirill Vemelka's 49 save, 1 goal against performance. What a showing the other night for him.
Look, Kirill Vemelka's numbers this year are actually pretty good. Just hasn't been getting any run support. And Connor Ingram kind of took over last year in Arizona over the crease. And this season, despite the fact that early in the year is when loss record was really good, the numbers have not been good and they're trending the wrong direction. So Vemelka now is getting a little bit of run support. And Maybe he's making a bid to come back and be the number one guy in Utah. You know, he's got some pretty nice gear. Like, I like his, you talked about his Brian's pads, but the way that they look with the color is really nice. I catch the other way. And you mentioned Vasilevsky, fastest to 300 wins. Connor McDavid, fourth fastest to 1,000 point. Mm-hmm. I mean, Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Mike Bossy, and Connor McDavid. Mm-hmm. I was looking at the stats last night. Like, Mike Bossy played 752 NHL regular season game. Mario Lemieux, 915. If those two had played full length, you know, careers, they'd be number two and number three in points behind Gretzky. And now if McDavid plays a long career, he'll be number two. He'll be over 2,000 points when it's all said and done.
How many people will buy a Vemelka jersey now that the Utah Hockey Club is actually selling them for the first time?
Now that it's available. And we know when we went to our broadcast meeting, they mentioned that, like, about how, well, you know, Utah, it's a process. They won't be available until November. I wonder how many people ordered Ingram at the start of the season and quickly will go and get the numbers and the nameplate changed to Vemelka now that it's a month later and he's playing that well. But that's not the jersey I would get anyway. If I was in Utah, I'd get a Clayton Keller jersey.
Hmm. Well, the one thing we do know is anybody who's buying one now is probably going to buy another one when they actually have a real nickname. So
when they have the new jerseys coming up next year. So, well, you know what? It's kind of like here. There will be a special night of Utah Hockey Club vintage nights. 7 nights out of the year, we'll wear our vintage jerseys from year one.
No, I can certainly remember as a very, very, very small child, the thrill of getting anything close to an NHL jersey for the first time in my life. And that leads us down the path of Sabres Learn to Play, presented by DeUville University. For 6 weeks of on-ice instruction available for kids 4 to 9, you can join the captain's crew to gain access to an exclusive skate with Alex Tuck and Rasmus Dahlin. And you can visit sabres.com/learn to play to sign up today. Shayna Goldman, next on Sabres Live.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome back, Shayna Goldman. She is our Friday staple here on Sabres Live. And if you'd forgotten who she writes for, she's branding today.
Yeah.
The Athletic. Marty's got his harvest colors on, I think.
Yeah.
I think this was post the Lindy Ruff suit from a couple of days ago. I figured you would enjoy his combination that is similar to yours today. So, it's a good time.
It's all coming together, Duffer. It's all coming together. You know, so, you got the goat head stuff today because Shayna loves the goat head. So it's all coming together.
Yeah, so, and I'm anti-black jersey. And every time I see the goat head, I'm like, beautiful. Wait, but on the topic of fashion, not to derail us off the bat, I have two things we need to discuss. First of all, speaking of Lindy Ruff suits, last night, very nice, the gray with the blue plaid. It was very subtle. It matches the Sabres. And I like when coaches go in the similar color scheme to it. But we need to talk about you guys' fashion this week. Like, those jackets?
The reversible ones?
Yeah, the Sabres are coming out with really cute fashion. I feel like I'm always complaining about what, you know, NHL merch looks like nowadays. And look at the Sabres.
Yeah, the reversible ones were popular because, Duffer, you have had many requests, and I've had many requests, and people are loving them. And The best part about it is when you put him on the blue and gold, you don't see the red and black. And when you put it on the red and black, you don't see the blue and gold unless you start opening up your jacket and you're showing everybody. But it's a well-done piece. I love it.
Quick update from Sabre practice. Jordan Greenway left in the middle of it. We will undoubtedly hear from Lindy Ruff later with an update. Just not sure that's going to fall in the window of our Sabres live show today. So, as always, stay with Sabres Social for the latest. Shayna, I'm told you've been doing some writing this week. It might have to do with some new coaches in the NHL. What have you learned, and what can you share with us?
Patrick Byron, people.
It's always fun when you pick a story and then you think it will be fun and then you forget some of the teams you have to write about and you have to start torturing yourself right now. That's what we've learned. No, okay. It's always interesting to check in on new coaches and new systems, especially when it's an off-season change versus a mid-season change, right? Because a mid-season change, how much can you logistically change on the fly versus off-season where you have full training camps to make your tweaks and adjustments? And generally speaking, we see those even strength adjustments made in training camp, and those take hold first, and then they start working on special teams. So I think we're seeing those adjustments for a couple teams now, right? Like the Kraken. They are adjusting their special teams on the fly. They're still adapting to their new even strength systems. Or you look at a team like Ottawa, where the first couple games were a little messy, but now you're looking at them and seeing how their rush defense has trended up. They've been outstanding. And look how stout they've been these last few games, holding the Bruins to no shots in the third period the other night, crushing the Toronto Maple Leafs, also with a new coach, who have no offense, who would have thought, to last night's game against the Flyers. They were still good defensively despite the score. So I think, you know, you're starting to see things come to fruition now.
Okay. I was looking at a page. It says odds of coaches getting fired. It was just from a couple of days ago, and Mike Sullivan was number one, you know, at plus 225. Like, if you look at the odds themselves. But I don't see Jim Montgomery on that list. And last night's game was not good. Not good for the Bruins. Not good for Swayman. Could he be a surprisingly, like, coach on the hot seat? And I know we talked about Brunette before, and there's others. But I'm looking at Jim Montgomery now, and I'm like, it's not really great in Boston when you lose 7-2 like that.
Yep. This is the hill I'm going to die on this year, that Jim Montgomery is not making it to the end of the season. And I was on that train last year. Not that I'm rooting for someone to get fired. Like, let's not take it the wrong way, because I think people get so dramatic with that. But it's just that I don't think he has the answers. I don't think the team is clicking. Yes, I think that there's flawed construction in Boston, right? Because I don't think Elias Lindholm is a 1C at his true value. I think you need to give him the best wingers in the world to make him that way, right? I don't think Charlie Coyle should be there, 2C. You look at defense, I don't think Zadorov should have gotten that contract. So all of that is flawed, yes. But generally speaking, the Bruins are a team that's greater than the sum of their parts, and they have not been this year. And it's not just the new additions. It's the people who have been there. I know Lindholm is hurt now, Hampus Lindholm. He was playing poorly. Charlie McAvoy is not up to snuff. David Pastrnak hasn't even looked as strong, except for the other night against, who is it, St. Louis?
The Blues, when he scored like in the
fantastic
third.
Yeah, he had a fantastic night. Yeah. But yeah, to me, that should be the top of the list. I don't disagree that Mike Sullivan should be up there, right? And it's not that Mike Sullivan's a bad coach. It's just that sometimes you need a new voice. You need to change things up, and the Penguins are so broken. But I think Jim Montgomery should be number one. And I think Derek Lalonde should be in that top three as well.
He is actually number two in the odds. It goes Sullivan, Lalonde, St. Louis, Luke Richardson, and then Tortorella and Greg Cronin. But I don't think those two are going anywhere. But and I don't think Luke Richardson's is going anywhere either. But I think Derek Lalonde is one also with Detroit. But again, it comes down to roster construction with Detroit. Yeah. Like, I don't like their roster.
Yeah.
And I think that it's hard for a coach sometimes to try to make pieces work when they're not supposed to be in those places.
Yeah, like Ben Chiarot, top four defenseman, I would say probably not. But my issue with Lalonde is, like, the Red Wings' penalty kill has been a disaster this year, and personnel has a lot to do with it. But I think we've seen really smart coaches kind of get their, you know, PKs to outperform their roster. He ran a great penalty kill in Tampa Bay. I know he's not the assistant coach running the actual tactics of it, but I'm shocked at the weaknesses they have, even with the roster in mind, based on, you know, what he's coached before.
Yeah, I do fear for Luke Richardson, only because Chicago did make a lot of tweaks to the roster. And I wasn't sure if it was going to result in a huge spike as far as team points are concerned. But when you have Connor Bedard and the team is struggling offensively as bad as it is, I think that's going to be the thing that might ultimately come back on Richardson here. So we'll see. It's never one person, one problem, you know, in all these situations. All that being said, what did you take away from Sheldon Keefe in his first year with the Devils? And I mean, what a week. Like, what a week. What that they just, you know, went through losing to San Jose, but then spending, you know, a great time in Sunrise and collecting two victories against the champs.
You know what? It's really interesting because I feel like this whole week kind of talks about their coaching situation in a bigger way than maybe we would have anticipated, because you're going to look at that game against San Jose. They were the better team. They should have won.
Yes.
They got goal lead by Mackenzie Blackwood.
Not only did they get goal lead, they scored in their own net to win, to lose 1-0. That was the only goal, is a Timo Meier own net.
Yeah. And I look at Blackwood and it's amazing how his stock has fallen over the years, right? He was supposed to be the next big thing. And I think that was always overhyped. I never thought he was going to be the, you know, the next coming of goaltending. But it's interesting to me that he leaves New Jersey and he finds his game again. Meanwhile, all these goalies are coming to New Jersey and they lose their game. And it's a continuous theme that I keep going. You know, you changed a lot of the coaching staff, but there's one member of it that stays on. And I don't understand it, because the Devils' biggest issues so far this year has been goaltending sometimes. And you're like, oh, a little odd. But I think that Keefe is doing a pretty good job there, because you see like the Nico Hischier line, right? They were absolutely thriving with Mercer, Hischier, and Meier until they weren't. So they made necessary changes, right? You're putting Paul Cotter up and going, okay, we're going to get a spark in a different way. And it's working for them. They got the Jack Hughes line going, and now they found a way to get Hischier's line going again. So it's clicking more. And yes, he has a lot of reinforcements. Personnel is a big deal in New Jersey. It's helped their defense and penalty kill with guys like Pesci and Dylan adding them in. But I think it's bigger than that. I think it's a combination of everything that's working for them, if they can just get reliable saves.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You mentioned reliable saves. I said yesterday on the show that I think the Oilers will have a different goaltender by the end of the season, that it won't be Stuart Skinner there, although Calvin Pickard won last night. But it just, I mean, he's a serviceable backup, but it's like, exactly, it was Nashville. And, you know, they actually, the Oilers almost gave it away, but that's the way it is. And now Carolina's got goalie issues with Freddie Anderson out and Pyotr Kochetkov doubtful. Is Mackenzie Blackwood the one goalie we should look at that could be on the move, just because I don't know that he's long-term going to be the answer in San Jose? They have Askarov there. Could they move on from Blackwood if a team is calling?
Yeah, why not? They should be listening to every single offer they can get, because their rebuild is going to be a long haul. It started later than it should have. They've had to manage some really bad contracts getting out from under them. And I don't think all of the returns for their big guys like Meier was up to what it should have been. So if you can find other pieces to squeeze value out of, why not? Because sometimes in this league, that depth player, depth addition sometimes costs way more than it should, right? And if you're the Sharks, like you said, they have their goalie of the future waiting. Why not, right? If he can handle playing a little more and you're not worried about overwhelming him at the NHL level behind that defense, why not? Because we're all going to be looking around the league at goalies and saying, who's the big ticket goalie to move? And it rarely happens in the regular season. Goalie trades are few and far between, especially in the regular season, which with a big name player like, I don't know, John Gibson, say. So I wonder if Blackwood could be that low-key guy that we're not talking about enough, because there should be teams looking for goaltenders without a doubt. And if you are a team like Carolina, you have the best defense in the league, and you know that you can put an average goaltender in and be just fine. If Blackwood can be that slightly above average kind of guy for them, why not?
Well, so just to put a bow on San Jose, part of their reason, and they lost narrowly at the Rangers last night, pretty decent effort, falling 3-2. They had been 5-2-1 prior. It wasn't just Blackwood. Vanacek has had some real nice moments in there to reestablish himself. And to your point about
another goalie out of New Jersey?
Yes.
And, better outside New Jersey?
He's a Capital, trust me. In this market, in the COVID year, all he ever did was play for Washington and beat Buffalo. It was the most annoying thing ever. But Askarov in San Jose in the AHL right now is 6-2 with a 164 and 949 save percentage. So these are things which obviously has him near the top in every meaningful category. Like, how much could Blackwood fetch on them? Like, if Edmonton, I'm really curious now because I think you guys are 100% right. Like, it's nice that San Jose has made some inroads. And yes, they want to keep making inroads. But if they can maximize some value for Blackwood, and what would that look like? I'm really curious here.
It's got to be what, like, at his best, maybe a second round pick, but that feels like a third round pick kind of move. Yeah. Where you're like, oh, that's it. But see, if you're San Jose, I also would stress selling high on Blackwood while you can, just in case game falls. I'm not saying it's going to, because we all know the skill is there, but let's say his game falls. Vanacek is not the guy you're going to be selling, in my opinion. Right. I don't care how well he does in the regular season. His playoff record, which I don't always put stock in this, but there's something there when it's happened with multiple teams now. When he's been in the playoffs, I don't think he's handled the environment well enough. I think we've seen his game completely slide. And it was part of the reasons, you know, the Devils were eliminated 2 years ago. You're like, okay, maybe there is something there. He's not the guy I'm selling to a playoff team, not Edmonton, not Carolina, when they aspire not just to be a playoff team, but a cup contender. So Blackwood is the guy to sell on. And I wonder if maybe you don't wait to get the highest bidder, but you take a good deal, a solid deal.
Here's the problem with...
I think he's at minimum, they're getting a first round pick for him, or they're getting somebody's top six scorer. That's what I think.
For Mackenzie Blackwood?
Yes.
I think that's asking too much. And there's the reason why I think it's asking.
If it's the Oilers, let's say, for some reason, and if Skinner can't, like, they got to make a deal.
Yeah, but here's the problem. I agree with Shayna. I think it's a second round at best, but I was thinking they will get a second round.
It's not worth it. That's a joke.
But no, I'm saying they will get a second round if they can retain salaries on Mackenzie Blackwood. He's only $2.3 million if you retain half. The problem is San Jose is already retaining three contracts. They can't retain more. You can only retain on three players. Brett Burns, Eric Karlsson, Tomas Hertl. You cannot retain more. So they won't be able to say to a team, hey, we'll send him to you for 50% on the dollars. So I think that would have been incentive. I think you get probably a third round pick with Mackenzie Blackwood. And really, if you're San Jose, you do it. You'd get an extra third round pick. Why not?
And then if you can get a third team to be the broker.
Sign him. Move forward with him. Stop taking draft picks. It doesn't do anything for you. Get better. They can.
Yeah, they have.
Well, see, I would accumulate the draft picks to try to be aiming for those young NHL caliber players, right? Because that third round pick, say, could be part of a package for that next good forward. Like, think a DeBrincat trade or something like that, right? Or someone, or Kirby Dach trade. Like, those are why you stockpile those picks. I think, yes, if you're a team like the Sharks, you're going to want to draft and develop a ton of players. But realistically, you're going to get it to a point in your rebuild where you say, we need now 21-year-olds and 24-year-olds to play with the 17-year-olds. So if you have that extra third-round pick, maybe you're willing to move yours in a year or so, something like that.
Yeah. Oh, talking about Erik Karlsson, Shayna, do you think the Pittsburgh Penguins should buy him out? I think next year, instead of a $9.9 million cap pit for them, it'd be a 7.5. The next year would be 9.5, and then just on like 750,000 for two more years. Do you think it's worth it for the Pittsburgh Penguins to maybe buy out Erik Karlsson at the end of the season?
No, I'm gonna say no. They are my next project. Granted, they lose one of two games this weekend to really go on a deep dive. This rock bottom, and is there any path forward? I think buying out is not just like waving the white flag and saying we're done. You're shooting yourself in the foot. I think you need to be really creative here. I'm not saying don't move on from him because it hasn't worked, especially with Chris Letang. It just, nothing's clicking. But I just think it's too much unless you're committing to completely tearing it down, which I don't think they're going to do.
10 seconds or less. Marty said if he was in line for the Utah Hockey Club jersey, he would get a Clayton Keller one. Who would you get?
Dylan Gunther. Nice. Keller's a great pick, though.
Obviously, Vemelka would be my choice.
He's in the starter's net this morning, by the way, Duffer. He's going to play tonight. He's starting back-to-back games.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. She's back next week. We are back right after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All right, just a little bit of time left. Marty, I'm not on social. Any update on Jordan Greenway?
No update right now, but it is the mentor strip. So, you know, the Sabres are bringing their mentors with them to Philadelphia, leaving today. So they have a nice little team picture with all the mentors. It could be a family member, a coach, somebody that has affected your life in a great way. And I did that, you know, a couple of times with my dad. One time with my father-in-law, which they both got to experience what life on the road is, with being in the hotel, the travel, the team meetings. Man, in Philadelphia one year, John Stevens was trying to run a meeting, and the parents, the dads, it was a dad strip at the time, kept asking questions. A 20-minute meeting lasted an hour and 20 because the dads wanted to know more about the game than, you know, to be able to get educated, because they all coach or were involved as kids. So those are fun. And sometimes they're fun also after the game. If you win, everybody has a little bit more fun, so that's good.
Well, we're back on the air tomorrow night, 6:30, MSG, pregame coverage, Buffalo-Philly. What are you anticipating based on the, I don't know, the challenges that have been this week so far?
So, funny enough, I don't think Tage Thompson will play tomorrow. I think what Lindy Ruff saw out of his lines yesterday, give Tage a little bit more time. I think you go back with Levi. I think you start the game with the lines you had in the third period. McLeod with Peterka and Tuck, and put Benson with Cousins and Quinn, and say, okay, let's go. Like, this is how we create energy. Let's go do it in Philadelphia. And I think that, you know, win two in a row now. Like, you don't want to lose two in a row, but you want to get on another win streak.
Yeah, Flyers have been piling up an awful lot of points lately, and quite often go beyond regulation time.
Yes.
So settle in. Could be a long one tomorrow.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.